Think big. Think positive. Never show any sign of weakness. Always go for the throat. Buy low, sell high. Fear, that's the other guy's problem. Nothing you have ever experienced can prepare you for the unbridled carnage you're about to witness. Right. Super Bowl, the World Series, they don't know what pressure is. In this building, it's either kill or be killed. Right. You make no friends in the pits and you take no prisoners.
No prisoners.
1 minute, you're up half a million in soybeans, and the next, boom, your kids don't go to college and they've repossessed your Bentley. Are you with me?
Take podcast. I'm your host Craig Turner, author of Turner's Take newsletter. You can find me on the web at turnerstake.com or turnerstakeag.com if you're a farmer. All my contact information is on those websites and also in the show notes for any of these podcasts. I write Turner's Take newsletter. It's a weekly newsletter that gives us kind of our macro thoughts on the economy and the grain markets. And the podcast also is for free. Anyone can get those. For clients, we have the Market Alert, which is more of a spec newsletter. And for hedgers, it's at Turner's Take Ag Marketing. And we go over our hedge ideas. And that's it. I work with broker-assisted clients, but also self-directed. We have a great online platform here for the computer and your phone. And the most popular category is the hybrid, which is a mix between the two. And yeah, happy to talk to anyone who's ever interested in working with me at Daniel's Trading. So let's get into it. WASDE was today. There's just a lot of hemming and hawing from traders, not so much farmers, but from traders and other people in the industry about what's been going on, you know, in the grain trade. So I'd say the big takeaway is it wasn't as bearish as some people thought it could be. Let's do soybeans first, because when the USDA last week said they're going to have to adjust export numbers, and they did. All right, so number one, USDA said we're going to have tariffs. China's not going to be buying as much. We're going to adjust the exports. They did by 250 million, which I got to say, that is a pretty big number. Now, ending stocks didn't go up automatically 250 million because there are some other things going on there. They also, let's see, the USDA increased soybean exports for old crop, which ended up bringing down the ending stocks for old crop a little bit. So that was good. We also saw, so the beginning stocks actually came down 40. So instead of starting off the year at 505, we started at 465. And that was to reflect how old crop exports have been going. Crush went up a little bit, went by 45 million, so that helped offset. I think the crush went up basically because soybeans are so low right now. There's every incentive to crush as much as possible if you can. Soybeans for everybody, so we're seeing the crush come up. So that was able to, and production went up 30 because they had to increase acreage a little bit, but they kept the yield the same. So beginning stocks came down 40, but production went up 30, so supply came down 10. Crushing went up 45, exports went down 250. So the net result was basically ending stocks increased 195 million bushels to 580. Now, what's interesting about that is, one, that's bearish. All right, there's no doubt about it. But the market's been pricing in a bearish number. I mean, a lot of what's been going on the soybean market, and has really been heavily weighing on all the commodity markets, was that China, you know, was not going to buy as many beans from us, or if any, will be eventually gaining clients from traditional South American clients who are outpriced in the South American market, and they'll be coming to us. And the USDA has basically said that's 250 million bushels worth. It's a big deal. But it's not the end of the world. So here we are with soybeans kind of rallying in the day and finished maybe up a penny. I thought that was kind of positive because when you look at the world stock numbers, the world stocks for soybeans increased. World ending stocks for old crop went from 92 and change to 96 and change, so up 3.5 million metric tons. If we look at the ending stocks projections for next year, 2018-2019, we're going from 87 million to 98 million. I think that has everything to do with my personal opinion. I still need time to go through the WASDE report from cover to cover, but just the initial reaction now that the market's closed and we're doing the podcast is we'll probably see a lot more South American acres come next year, or the USDA has at least got to account for that, because, you know, farmers down there are making decisions now where they're going to plant corn or soybeans, and if they're getting 20 to 25% premiums on their beans and 0% premiums in corn, I'm thinking the USDA is seeing it the same way. A lot of beans get grown down here. Meanwhile, we still have a lot of beans here that are not going to be sold. So I think that's why we saw that. So that was bearish. That was definitely a bearish tilt, and yet we closed even for the day. Sometimes that's bullish. We'll have to see. Just the numbers alone would have said that's a bearish report, but we're down so much. You kind of got to question how much the sellers are coming out. Now, another thing with soybeans, that's based on a 48.5 million yield. If we, a 48.5 bushels per acre. Some people in the industry are talking about 49, 50, 51, 49 and a half. Numbers are all over the place. It's very difficult to tell what the yields are going to be. But I think what a lot of people say is it's going to be above trend line. So I'm thinking worst case right now is 51 yield on soybeans. If we have a 51 yield soybeans and we don't resolve these tariffs, alrighty, we basically increase production by another 200 to 250 million bushels. So that puts our ending stocks from the high 500s to basically 800. So that's bearish, right? 800 ending stocks for soybeans almost sounds comical or ridiculously high, right? You know, when people were predicting $5,000 gold or, you know, or just crazy numbers, right? Now, 800 ending stocks sounds so high for soybeans, but, you know, if you take away 250 million in export capacity from China, you know, so you know, and we have 90 million acres basically of soybeans and a monster crop, you know, with all the soybean demand from China, you would say, okay, well, worst case there is then 500, 550 million carryout, which is bearish. It's definitely not bullish, but it's not, you know, ridiculously burdensome, right? But when you take that some of that China demand out of the question, and you get 90 million acres almost of soybeans, and you get this 51 bumper crop yield, yeah, then you can get to 800 ending stock. So I can make the case for, you know, where corn beans could go lower here. Maybe we touch $8 in the front month. That's like 30 cents lower. I guess I can make the case for it. I don't, you know, there's still a long way to go on this. And I've seen some of the more conservative numbers with soybeans. Like maybe it's at, you know, 49 and a half or 50. I mean, at 50, just to give you an idea, if the yield's just 50, ending stocks are 715 in my book, or about 700. And if Trump gets a deal done with the Chinese before midterms, you know, all of a sudden at a 50 yield and the China deal happens sometime in the fall, ending stocks are down to 450. So there's two big moving parts in soybeans right now. One is, what's this yield? Every bushel in yield basically trans out to 90 million bushels in the ending stocks, which is a big deal. You get a, you know, 51 to 49, you know, a 51 to a 49 ending yield for soybeans is the difference of almost 200 million bushels on the carryout. That's big. If Trump can get a deal done, which the rumors are they want to before midterms, that's another maybe 200 million bushels also. I don't think we'll get back all 250 million bushels that the USDA said we'll lose, but let's say we get 200 back. So all of a sudden, depending on the yields, 49 to 51, and depending on if China gets something done, we can have a plus or minus of 400 million bushels in the ending stocks for soybeans, you know, where worst case scenario is we're at 800, right, in my mind. And then best case scenario, give me 1 second here. I'm going to put you on hold while I add back. I'm going to adjust my spreadsheet here. All right, and best case scenario, we're like at 350. So we've got an 800 to, let's say, 350 range, depending on if a deal gets done between midterms. And, you know, where this crop's going to be, between 48 and a half and let's call it 51 and a half. I mean, that's in my mind, that's the difference between beans being in the low eights, right, to being back up to $10. So, I mean, I think at the beginning of the year, I was talking about beans have a potential to trade $8 to 12. That's why we're doing a lot of our marketing in the cash side. And then if we want to do re-ownership, it'd be through spreads or through options. And yet here we are, the $8 to $12. And I can't believe we're getting on the closer to the $8 range, especially in July. But then again, you know, back in January or February when we were writing those reports, I really never saw this whole Trump thing coming and the tariffs. And I don't think anyone else did either, as far as I know. So that's the reality we live in. Beans seem to be a value here. I do not want to own futures. I don't see the point in selling if you're a farmer down here either. Eventually, deals get done. I do, and it's a protein world. That WASDE report, I'll have to go through it deeper again. But one thing I did see is that even though we have all this tariff stuff and China's looking for alternatives, soybean demand is still growing. All right, which means the global economy is still growing, especially in developed worlds, and protein is still in demand as population grows too. Population is growing, GDP is growing, therefore protein demand is growing. So soybeans continue to be have a real organic story. When I say organic, I mean not the GMO versus organic. I mean, you know, a natural growth story that doesn't need government intervention, like kind of happened with ethanol, right? So long term, that's good. Short term, I don't know. I feel like I'm throwing the dice. Now, when I say short term, I mean like in the week, next week or two. Going forward, what I'm going to be writing about in probably the Spec newsletter and in the Hedge newsletter is going to look for ways, like if Trump gets a deal done between now and the midterms, what happens in the soybean market and how can we position ourselves? I'm thinking it's call spreads. And we're probably going to have to go out to January beans to give us enough time. But I like that idea because I do think we're a dollar lower than where we really should be. And maybe even, and depending on these yields come out, if we're wrong about these and it's not as rosy as people say, or maybe we're just tearing up the really good parts and over the bad parts, maybe $1.50. So I'm going to be looking into that. That's going to be I'll probably look at it tomorrow and early next week and try to figure out some ways to get some exposure that way. Going forward, I see limited downside. I'm not exactly bullish, but it would seem that we're getting to the point now where, you know, at some point soybeans, again, Brazil is now at a $2 premium over U.S. soybeans. So if U.S. soybeans, just to give you an idea on that, if U.S. soybeans are $8.50, all right, $8.50 times 1.25, it's about $10.62. So, you know, if China came here and bought soybeans for $8.50, you slap on that 25% tariff, it's like $10.60, right? $2.10 over. Last time I heard, Brazilian soybeans are almost $2 over U.S. soybeans, which means Canada's probably playing a markup, getting price gouged of 23% at this point. So that doesn't help them at all. And then all the other clients, traditional clients of South America, are looking at that price and they're like, why am I paying $10.50 in Brazil equivalent when I go to the United States and buy $8.50, which is why the USDA only probably moved exports $250 million. Like they didn't just say, you know, the United States is going to lose all, you know, let's say China, rough number, we export about 2 billion bushels a year. China's about half of that. Let's just say China takes in, you know, a billion bushels, you know, from us. Well, the USDA is now lowering exports by only a quarter of that because a lot of business that was traditionally South America is going to come back up and make up maybe, let's say, that $750 million. We don't lose the full billion. But so there's definitely going to be demand there. So soybeans most likely going to have some tough sled in here. And we're going to be living and dying probably on the negotiations. But once that happens, I think we can make a good run. And that's what I'm going to be kind of looking at in terms of call spreads. Probably in January. We'll look at NOVA. I think that's too close. March may be a little too far out. January may be the best way to do it. And that's how we're going to handle soybeans. So for the time being. From a farmer, I wouldn't make any sales down here. If you want to re-own something, because I know a lot of farmers made sales, cash sales. Now would be the time. Cheap call spreads in January. And we'll just go from there. The only bearish thing I could see is what happens if, you know, the only way I don't think that works out is if we start hearing about South American acres really starting to pile up, let's say in October, November, while this deal between the president and China is still getting hammered out. And that could mute some bullish response, but I still think a deal between China and the United States is good it could be good for a significant rally when it does happen. So we'll play it by ear. That's why I like the option spreads, something that's low price. I don't want to be in futures. Being long futures in soybeans is basically tweet by margin call. It is, it's not, or margin call by tweet. It's no fun. So we'll just stick with that. I'm going to touch on wheat for a second. The USDA did not bring down exports. The exports of wheat are terrible. They really are. And I'm going to, the wheat ending stocks came in about 9.85. They need to bring down exports more. We're going to be over a billion. Quality could be an issue. The spring wheat looks great. We'll see what, I know the protein level is a little bit better than they thought they would be for the winter wheat, even though the production may not be there. It's hard to see wheat rallying hard. At some point, there's a lot of value for wheat because corn and soybeans and wheat are low, so it's hard to keep on going lower, but not impossible. But there's going to be some value in there too. Also, some of the wheat issues going on around the world, in Russia, the Black Sea region, Europe, Germany, should be somewhat supportive too. So let's get on to corn, which is really the second half of what I want to talk about today. First off, the ending stocks for corn went down also. We had, and you can tell that by, if you look at new crop beginning stocks, they went down by 75 million. So exports have been so strong for old crop corn, those exports went higher. So our starting off point for new crop is about 2 billion now. The USDA did have to raise acres, about 1 million. They kept the yield at 174, more about that in a little bit. What they also did, too, is they bumped up the feed. They lowered ethanol, but they did bump up exports, not just for the old crop. We went from 2.3 billion in the old crop to 2.4 billion in the old crop, and we went from 2.1 billion in the new crop to 2.225. So the use went up. What it ended up doing is instead of getting a little bit of a bump in ending stocks because everyone was trying to factor in the higher acreage, we actually got a little bit of a draw. Not big, but a little bit because the export number is so strong. And I think that's a reflection of, basically all the issues that Argentina have. And the corn crop wasn't as big as people thought it would be. And, Ukraine had some issues too. And the United States really is the exporter of last resort in corn here. And you look at the prices, they're good prices, and we're seeing a strong export. So that's the way it should be when you get these kind of prices. So the ending stocks for new crop came in $1.5 billion. Now, normally, $1.5 billion, for corn, we'd be closer to $4 right now, maybe $4 in the low fours. But, one, soybeans is down so much, it's weighing us down. And also, the yields weren't updated. I haven't seen anyone who hasn't thought that yields are going to be better than trend line, just based on the good to excellent ratings around the country. Again, has been hotter than normal years, but there's been plenty of moisture. A lot of places look good around. The thing is, how much better than trend line is it going to be? I think it could, conservative would be 177. So if we are, so that's 3 bushels higher. People may say that's a little low, but let's just say it was the 177. If corn yield is 177 and we've got about 89.1 million acres, which is the latest USDA figure, we're probably going to be at 1.8 billion carryout. All right. If that's the case, corn is really still pretty fairly priced, I think, right around here. Or maybe deserves to go a little bit higher. If we have a 180 yield in corn, we're probably going to be at a 2 billion carryout, which is not the end of the world. I mean, a 2 billion carryout isn't tight. It isn't crazy in terms of being burdensome. Plus, keep in mind, the whole tariff thing in South America is going to probably lead to more South American soybean acres at the expense of corn. So we could see a situation where even a 180 yield, which only gets us to a 2 billion carryout in corn, plus lower acres in South America, plus we have the lowest world ending stocks in corn right now since 2013. So I see a lot more bullish potential cards in the deck for corn. We just kind of got to wait this out. And I wouldn't be surprised. I know there's a lot of old crop corn out there. All right, I'm not saying get bullish on corn right now. I'm just not that bearish on it. And plus, There's a lot of old crop left. And anyone, if you remember last year, when we hit the lows in the front months, like the front month lows last year on the continuous chart, pretty sure was the last day in August, which was the first notice day, where a lot of farmers had to decide, am I getting rid of this old crop, which a lot of them did, and I got to bring in the new crop, because they didn't want to roll contracts, they didn't want to store it anymore. Also, a lot of them didn't have the capacity, and then you're paying commercial storage instead of on-farm storage. So there's a whole slew of things that led to that pressure. Not be surprised if we saw more of that this year in August, all right? So I wouldn't put it past corn to come down a little bit more or not really rally a whole lot between now and the end of August. But if we do have, if the yield isn't 180, what if it's 178 or 179? And we get less acres in South America, then all of a sudden I can get neutral, mildly bullish on corn. And then if a deal can get done before the midterms, then I'm a lot more bullish on corn because it would cause beans to rally. And one of the reasons why corn did not rally more today is because beans were kind of weighing it down, right? At one point, corn was up 10 cents after the report today, and beans went along with it. And then people saw that bean number, like, no, we're selling beans, and beans sold off down 8 cents. And you could see when the market was more jazzed about that corn number, corn was leading soybeans higher. And then when the tide was turning, it was because traders, you saw the volume come in and selling the beans, and as the beans went from unchanged down to about minus 10, it was dragging corn with it. There's definitely a relationship here. You can't have 850 beans and 450 corn, I don't think. I just don't think you can have that. So, you know, if beans were to rally a buck, let's say right before the midterms, you would think that would allow corn then to also come up substantially. So when I was talking about before, you know, how do you structure something like that? I don't want to be long futures. Or if corn, I think corn you can be long futures. You just have to have a lot of margin available if you want to sit through it. I would say the safer way to play it now at this point is, you know, again, look at call spreads. Do you go to December or do you go to March and you look at call spreads or calls? I mean, calls are relatively inexpensive in corn right now, and you say to yourself, well, where's March corn trading? You know, what if we went up 30 cents? Where are the options? What if it was spread? That kind of stuff. And I think that would be a nice way to play it. I'm actually calling it the midterm Trump-China deal trade, where if something does happen, what's going to happen to these markets? What kind of limited risk spreads we can look into now? And, you know, that'll be our risk. I just don't want to get into futures because, like I said, it's margin call by tweet. And I'm really not interested in that right now, between now and the midterm. So I think that's how we're going to play it. If you're a farmer, you're really concerned about things, I guess you can buy some puts. If you're a spec trader, I can see selling some rallies here as long as there's no news about new trade deals. I think that's kind of the hot potato of selling the rallies right now. You know, if you're on the spec side, you're probably selling rallies intraday or, you know, as a swing trade, which is fine right up until the United States and China get in a room with each other, and then it's not so fine. So I think that's kind of the yin and the yang of how it's going to trade short term. Long term, I'm a lot more bullish than where prices are now. So I'm going to go back tonight on the train and really read through the USDA report. I'll put out any updates on what we find either tomorrow in the newsletter or most likely when we do the podcast on Monday. In the meantime, if you have any questions, you want to contact me, please feel free to do so. All my information's in the contact in the show notes or on the website. If you're a client here, I always like hearing from you. You know, if you like these kind of ideas too, and I'll say this also, Daniel's Trading, you know, some clients I hear from all the time, others not so much. I do put my ideas in the newsletter, but I'll put everyone. And, you know, the farmers and traders who are very active, I get to talk to a lot more. And, you know, the guys who aren't is great, that's fine, but I don't always get all my ideas out either. So always feel to call in if something's going on. I'm happy to talk anytime. All right, well, listen, regardless if you're a client or not, here at Daniel's Trading of Mine, or you just like the podcast, thank you for listening. If you ever want to contact me for any reason, I'm always always happy to talk to you. Have a great week, and if I don't speak to you again, I'll check in with you all on Monday.
This material is conveyed as a solicitation for entering into a derivatives transaction. This material has been prepared by a Daniels trading broker who provides research market commentary and trade recommendations as part of his or her solicitation for accounts and solicitation for trades. Daniels Trading, its principals, brokers, and employees may trade in derivatives for their own accounts or for the accounts of others. Due to various factors such as risk tolerance, margin requirements, trading objectives, short-term versus long-term strategies, technical versus fundamental market analysis, and other factors, such trading may result in the initiation or liquidation of positions that are different from or contrary to the opinions and recommendations contained therein. Past performance is not necessarily indicative of future performance. The risk of loss in trading futures contracts or commodity options can be substantial, and therefore, investors should understand the risks involved in taking leveraged positions and must assume responsibility for the risks associated with such investments and for their results. You should carefully consider whether such trading is suitable for you in light of your circumstances and financial resources. You should read the risk disclosure accessed at www.danielstrading.com. Daniels Trading is not affiliated with, nor does it endorse any trading system, newsletter, or similar service. Daniels Trading does not guarantee or verify any performance claims made by such systems or services.